Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Morning/afternoon/evening.
Hello, folks. How are you all?
How are you, Gabriella?
Hey, I'm good. I'm officially out of my birthday week now, but I really did. I squeezed the pips on that one.
Oh, mate.
I had a nice time.
And there was a lovely picture of you on Instagram with some beautiful bows in your hair.
Yes, that was some makeshift wrapping paper that my friend Sarah did that I ended
absolutely
up in my
gorgeous
hair as bows. It was very good.
Well done, Sarah.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it was just really nice. But something quite funny, Mr. Gabby went out on a bit of a limb for my birthday present, I'm going to say. And so I've been starting a little bit of work again. And so The present essentially is him creating me a website for myself as a freelancer. Oh. And as part of that, he's organised a photo shoot so I can have some nice photos of myself taken for the website.
Wow, who's taking the photos? A photographer?
Yes, a photographer.
Wow,
our friend.
Mr. Gabby, that's so nice.
I know, it's really cool, isn't it? And
yeah.
A part of the present was to get me an outfit that I can wear in this photo and look super professional. And he bought me a two-piece suit, a two-piece check suit.
Yeah.
And I looked like Hillary Clinton.
See, I really liked it because you sent me a picture of it, and I described it as Cher from Clueless meets the politician.
I looked at the model, and I could see where he was going. If I had looked like her in the suit, it would have been amazing. It would have been like a touch. But unfortunately, I just don't think I could pull it off.
It was a big check. It was a large print.
It's a large
that probably
print.
Would I think it would drown out a smaller person, but I didn't think it drowned you at all.
Oh, mate, that's very kind. But it was also quite expensive. So I was like, do you know what? I think we should send this back. I'm going to find something else. I'm going to stick to the brief. I'm going to spend that money on something that I can wear in this photo shoot looking super cool and professional.
Yeah.
The suit went back. But I've spent the week now just like ploughing through websites trying to find a super professional cool look that I like.
Oh my god, that's so hard without going on like, I mean, much as we like these brands like LK Bennett and Reese.
Well Mr. Gabby spent a little bit of money in a place that I wouldn't have usually bought clothes from.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to buy it from somewhere that's a bit more expensive than I would usually go. Do you know, I'm not going to go to Cars or Under the Stories, which is my staples.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in this new world of like a slightly more expensive price point, and I'm just like, ugh.
Have you been on the outnet?
I have not been on the outnet.
Oh my God, it's my fave. I love going on there and looking at stuff because it's basically like a Net-a-Porter, but cheaper. And I always go on there and I'm always like, oh, it's so much cheaper than Net-a-Porter, I'll definitely be able to afford something, and then I can afford like a pair of wellies.
Maybe I'll have a look on there.
Yeah, it's like really, really designer stuff, but like 50 or 60% off because it's like end of the line or whatever. It's like it's basically posh TK Maxx, but but I still can't afford anything on there. It's really funny.
I do love a TK Maxx. Okay, well that's my Saturday sorted. Anyway, enough about me. How are you, mate?
I'm all right. I started my job this week, which is very exciting.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it's quite like a chill transition to working life because I'm working from home. I'm working 3 days a week. And like my new colleagues seem really nice. It's very odd starting in at home because you don't get the bounce. You do not get the bounce, which, you know, which is fine because it just means I'm kind of focusing more probably. But it's very strange, basically.
Do you think we'll ever go back to working in an office?
Well, this week Boris Johnson has said that has he said it? I don't even know. I might have missed it. That we should start going back to offices, or maybe he didn't say.
Yeah, there's definitely chat of it.
But like in many ways, I wouldn't mind it. I thought I'd love working from home, but actually, it's quite like it's just odd. It's isolating. It's more isolating than I expected it to be.
Well, it's hard especially when you're starting a new role and like usually you'd be in the office kind of getting to know people, asking questions willy-nilly, you know, oh, is that how that works? Oh, I'll kind of, you know, like, whereas when you're at home, you don't have that. You're kind of just, you know, with you and your machine, just like, ooh,
staring at screen. Doing a lot of Zoom calls.
well,
but I'm kind
help,
of used
right?
to that because the job that I used to work in was very, it was like all over there were offices all over the world and we spent a lot of time on video calls, so it's not completely unusual.
And of course, we've
unusual.
Been doing lots of Zoom interviews for BFNs, so
and
that's
we've
really,
been doing
lots it's helped
of,
you out.
It's prepared me, but prepared I mean, you. Obviously, I'm talking about this, and most people have been working all this time. And they're like, so there's loads of Zoom calls, and obviously, we're all going through this. But it's just weird starting a new role, I think.
Yes, no, I think fair enough.
But
mate.
Very exciting.
Enough.
Very exciting.
Yeah, congrats. Yeah.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. Should we talk about the show?
Let's.
Okay. So this week we are talking to Regina Townsend. She's another American.
Another American.
We've gone so international next week because there's an Australian. She is the founder of an advocacy group called Broken Brown Egg.
Yes.
I think we talked to her. I've had to cut quite a lot of the interview out because I think we talked to her for something like 50 minutes and I could have kept talking to her. We just had a lovely chat, didn't we?
Yeah, she's really, really lovely and very easy to talk to.
Yeah, and she's been through the hardest time.
She has.
Just like years of trying for a baby and then, like, I don't want to give it away, but there was like a fostering situation.
Mm-hmm.
That just like, that I love, she just kind of casually dropped into the conversation and we were both like, what?
Yeah. I mean, we don't really talk about that. We haven't really come across it on the podcast until, I suppose, you know, we did one episode on adoption. So it's interesting to hear that and, not to give it away. I won't talk anymore, actually. Just listen to the interview, guys.
Just a quick note on it's another classic lockdown interview. Very atmospheric. There's a lot of background noise. You'll hear some planes, but you'll also hear some birds.
I like the birds.
Yeah, I like the birds.
Yeah.
So just, you know, just it just feels like we're there with her, to be honest.
Yeah, which is good. And Liz and Nick are off to the clinic for a pretty big moment.
Yes, they are. And they've also got a bird joining them.
Have they got a bird as well?
Yeah, it's quite bird themed this week.
Where the fuck's our bird?
Yeah, I've got no birds here. We've had a siren go past in the last 5 minutes.
I've got lots of builders. I think everyone on my street is now doing like clambering to do building work. Yeah. So there's just like scaffolding guys down over there. There's a forklift truck down over there.
Oh my God. John's done up our kitchen.
Oh, lovely.
It's looking really nice. It's a lovely dusky blue. I'll put a picture on my stories.
Do please.
Yeah. And then Professor Tim.
Ah, the optimum time of day for sperm.
Yeah.
Have you heard this rumour?
No.
That the sperm are more active in the morning, I think.
I have
that
not
was
heard
what.
That rumour.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that just leaves us to say enjoy the show.
Yeah, please do enjoy the show. You can rate and review it if you like it. If you don't like it, don't bother.
You can. You could subscribe if you like it. You Again, if you don't bother. Like
yeah. You can follow us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can follow us on Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can follow us on Facebook.
At Big Fat Negative.
And you can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
We've had some lovely emails this week.
We have indeed had some lovely emails this week. Keep them coming, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And please enjoy the show.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Can I just first apologise for any birdsong or barking in this segment? Because we have the windows open. Because it is hot in this room. So, yes, I should hope we won't be interrupted by dogs or birds.
Spend all day in this room.
You do spend all day in this room. This is your own... I was going to say your own private hell, but I don't know, is it?
It's all right.
It's all right. So, what's happened to you this week?
Well, it's not so much about what's happened to me this week.
Yeah.
What's happened to you this week?
Well, I actually went to the clinic this week.
I went in the vicinity of the clinic this week.
You did. But before we talk about that, I'd like to back up to explain kind of how it came about, really.
Sure.
So I think last week we spoke about how I was going to start pestering my clinic via email.
Yeah.
And I did do that.
You sure did.
I did. I did ring them, but it seemed that email got the best response. And I emailed my consultant directly and sort of asked her what happens, what is the proposal, what's going to happen next. And so the first thing that she said was that I needed to make sure that all of our blood work was up to date. And so in order to avoid paying more money, I actually wrote to the NHS, to our NHS clinic, to WIFI, and requested our notes and all of our documentation. So that arrived actually pretty quickly. I think they have I think it's about 28 days, isn't it, that they have to get the information to you. But I think it was maybe two and a half weeks. And they sent all of that stuff through. So I was able to speak to the nurses and send the information, send all the blood work that we had through to them via email. And they came back to say that that was accepted, which was great. And then I was told that I had to call them between days 8 and 12 of my period, because they wanted to do a mock transfer. And obviously it's been a little while since we've talked about how our journey has, you know, begun.
It's last year now, wasn't it? 6 months?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah. In our world.
Yeah.
So, basically...
Is it only that long? It feels like forever.
It does feel like forever. It does feel like forever. But yeah, just to sort of recap, really, we've had my first ever embryo transfer did not go well.
According to plan.
It did not go according to plan. So they wanted to do a mock transfer on me to make sure that they could actually get access if they needed, or when they need to, if they need to. Hopefully they will need to. And so to make sure that I didn't have to go in for more surgery before I started taking any drugs.
Taking the drugs.
Which makes perfect sense, I think.
Yeah, I think we've always had mock transfers now, haven't we? We had it last time.
Yeah, with the NHS. Yeah, they also made the decision to...
Did you have it the first time with the NHS?
Yes.
And we had it with... In the first round as well.
Well, no, the first round was...
Was there...
No. I mean, there was, but there was only a mock transfer after they discovered they couldn't
get
access.
Yeah, that's right. I knew you had a mock transfer with them.
Yeah, I did. So it all makes a lot of sense to do that. So I was told to ring between days 8 and 12 of my cycle for them to book in a mock transfer, which was going to cost us the princely sum of £250. But I feel like it's worth it to potentially avoid any issues down the line. And so I went into the clinic. We actually got sent, it was quite good actually, we got sent all of our kind of consents and things through the post, not even through the post, via email.
For electronic signature.
Electronic signatures.
Did you do yours or did you just...
I don't remember. I think I did a squiggly.
Yeah, I did a squiggle. Try to make it as
as lifelike as possible. True to life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got sent all of our documents through email a couple of days beforehand, and we signed them, did a squiggle, made sure that we were happy with everything.
I love the electronics. I just have to press a button after you do it once. Sign,
yeah, that's true.
Sign, yeah. Sign. Yeah. I don't know what I'm saying. Sign, sign.
Just sign it all. And then we were good to go. So last week I went into the clinic for the first time in about 5 months. Is it? When did we go and have a chat with Dr. T?
Well, it was before lockdown, so must be a while.
Anyway.
Anywho.
Since coronavirus, this is the first time I've been into a clinic. And I was really nervous about it. Not necessarily going into a clinic because of coronavirus, but just going into a clinic to have a mock transfer that may not go to plan and that may mean that we have to be delayed with everything. I feel like I wasn't hiding it that well, my nerves.
You were okay.
Was I?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good of me.
Yeah. Made strong stuff.
I was really apprehensive about it, actually.
Yeah.
Really, really apprehensive about it.
I wasn't of much help, as I couldn't come in.
No, so Nick wasn't allowed to come in with me.
I'd only passed out anyway, so...
That's true. You have got a history of that, haven't you? but that seems to be fairly standard with partners and stuff at the moment, I think, doesn't it?
I sat in the car.
You did. You sat in the car. So, I was feeling really apprehensive. I actually worked in the morning because I wanted to just keep my mind off it, kind of keep the distraction, to be honest. And
I think we were worried about, thinking what bad news can we have?
Yeah, I basically go into all appointments with that default mentality.
What can they tell us this time?
Yeah. What's going to go wrong? So I got in there. They were very strict about timings. So I had to make sure that I arrived no more than 10 minutes for my appointment. And they had a little note on the door to sort of explain what you needed to do when you got in there. And when I arrived, or when I was sort of stood outside waiting to go in, I hadn't appreciated that they wanted everyone to wear masks. And fortunately, you had been to Asda earlier that day and had bought me a mask.
As if I knew.
So I was fully prepared.
Yep.
So I got my mask out, rung the bell, and the lady let me in.
The ski mask, but it still did the job.
They didn't stipulate masks. There's no guidance on what kind of mask you needed.
You were in there with a Spider-Man mask on.
I'd have loved that, to be fair. He is my favourite, so, you know. So I had to go in immediately, sort of sanitise my hands, and then was directed to some chairs, which had been pre-cleaned. I think there's some people had left before me. And so she, you know, the receptionist had made sure to clean all the chairs and kind of directed me to where I needed to sit. And then she took my temperature, which was textbook, by the way, and directed me upstairs to the room. I mean, I feel like I'm going to be one speaking through most of this episode.
Well, I've got nothing to add, really. I can only guess. I can give what I assumed happened.
Yeah, so they put me into a room. Obviously, because it's a private clinic, they have private little patient rooms. And I was asked to come in with a reasonably full bladder. I managed to drink a good liter of water before I went in, and my bladder was not full enough.
Yeah, but didn't you say you went to the toilet before you went out?
Half an hour before I went out.
It's a rookie mistake there.
And then I drank a whole liter of water.
Yeah.
How would you have done it?
I was just drunk and not saved it.
Well, I'm sorry.
As an experienced mock transferer. Spectator.
I don't. I know these things. So anyway, my bladder wasn't full enough. I could
practically perform the procedure myself.
Especially the full bladder part. Yeah. My bladder wasn't full enough, basically, so...
Isn't that how they trace it in? Around the bladder?
Yeah, it was full, but it wasn't full enough. And then I had to keep drinking. And then they finally got me in. I mean, I'm surprised I didn't get any correspondence from you. I thought
what did you ask? How's it going?
Well, yeah. Just thought you might want to know how I was doing. Because I've been there for almost 2 hours. But I think you just...
Thanks for this. Put me on the spot right now.
I'm just wondering if you just didn't want to know bad news.
Kind of.
Well, I don't blame you. So, I went in for the transfer, and as you can probably tell from our jovial tones, it went fine. My bladder does need to be quite full for it to be successful, so that's going to be a joy if we get to that point. But the consultant was able to get the catheter in. I think it was actually the smallest catheter that they've got. And she double checked that I'd actually had the surgery, which I did, but it was almost 18 months ago now. It's a bit longer than that, actually.
About 18 months, yeah, around about 8.
Because she actually said that she thought that the scar tissue was starting to reform, which I have to say gave me a little bit of a panic. But she didn't seem to think that it would be a problem to go ahead with some, well, potentially go ahead with some sort of transfer if we kind of get to that point reasonably quickly. So that was good. And I was all ready to ask a lot of questions. But I kind of just got rushed out the door. So it was like, yeah, fine, that's great. Get them to, you know, organise for them to transfer the eggs down from London. And... get dressed and bugger off, basically. It was a bit of an odd experience. Like, I didn't feel remotely uncomfortable or, concerned about being in the clinic with, you know, obviously everything that's going on, because they were really good around cleanliness and making sure that everybody was separated and things. But I definitely didn't feel like I got the answers to my questions. Because I just kind of got rushed
I suppose
out.
They can do all that
remotely.
Yeah, when you're safely out of their faces.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel, obviously in the aftermath of it all, knowing that technically there's no issue for us to kind of go ahead?
I think I felt better. Like, when I was... in the car, wait, I thought, I don't think it was 2 hours, but I can remember thinking, it's been a while now, is that a bad sign?
Mm.
I'm not sure if it would be, if it went wrong, would it take any longer than if it went right? So does it mean anything, the amount of time that you're in there?
Yeah.
But no, I think, get it done as soon as possible, but at least... it was a success.
Yeah. I mean, how did you feel about the fact that you couldn't come in with me?
Yeah, not good. But it's a weird situation now, isn't it?
Mm.
I think if it had been a situation where you just, like that time where they didn't want me to come in because they were worried I was going to pass out again.
Yeah.
That was worse.
Yeah.
But yeah, so no, I want to come in.
Mm.
But this time, I kind of understand, wasn't there? But I think this, when it actually happens, is going to be worse. And the chance because you want, I want to be there, but I know I can't be there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't really know how it's going to, like, how the whole process is going
to
operate.
And it's the first time I haven't been able to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bet they didn't even notice.
Actually.
Did someone ask about me?
Yes, they did.
Oh.
Yes, they did. The lady in reception, who is really, really lovely, by the way, the blonde lady, I think her name's Sue, she's really nice. She was like, oh, is he waiting outside for you? So they did ask after you.
Thank you, receptionist.
She's really lovely, actually. So I was like, I meant to say that to you, actually. Obviously, it's just taken us recounting it for the podcast for me to remember.
Take that back.
So there you go. You were
someone after. Remembered me.
Someone remembered you. Yeah, so next steps then. Basically, we've been in touch with the London Egg Bank to organise for the eggs to be transferred down to the clinic, which gave me a whole new concern because due to the coronavirus, everything is delayed.
I'll go and pick them up if they want me to.
I mean, I was about to suggest it when she said, yeah, things are a little bit delayed at the moment and there's a bit of a backlog, so it's going to be slightly longer than 2 weeks. Didn't tell me how much longer than 2 weeks it was going to be. Which really did not calm my anxieties, given that I'm due to start my period in about 2.5 weeks. So I've sort of emailed them again and pleaded my case and said, please, 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 can you send them down as soon as you can? So she's messaged me actually just before we started recording this to say that some good news, and one of their senior embryologists has just gone back to work. So they are working really hard on clearing the backlog.
You sound like he's just been on the break.
Yeah.
He's just got back in.
Yeah. So I'm really hopeful that that will push things along. I also kind of gave the poor woman a bit of context around why I wanted things to get moving, because
come on.
I really don't want to have to be waiting for too long and then potentially have to go in for more surgery if this scar tissue does completely reform.
How does it work with me? Do I hand my cup to them at the door?
I don't know, love.
Post it through the letterbox?
Yeah, I don't know. This cool. is the thing.
Hello?
Excuse me, tap the window. Little hatch. yeah, I don't really know. So I've also emailed our consultant just to find out, just explain to her what the situation is with the London Egg Bank. Because I don't know if she's going to say, well, unless the eggs are here before cycle day one, we ain't doing it. Which is not ideal. Or if she says, it's fine, we know that they're going to get here before they need to be fertilised and transferred, let's carry on. I don't know what the rules are. So I've asked her those questions, and I've also asked her, what do I need to do? So do I need to call them on cycle day one? How's this going to work? I mean, I'm kind of assuming it's going to be just like a frozen embryo transfer, to be honest with you, because that's kind of what it is, but in terms of like preparing my body and stuff. But I don't want to assume, because if I assume I know what's going on, stuff's just going to hit me from the side, like a kipper in the face. So, thanks. Just came to me. So it's been an exciting week in terms of getting things done. And actually it's quite nice to feel like we are actively moving towards something again. But I'm also trying my best not to get ahead of myself, I think. I'm very cautious to wind myself back in when I start thinking about, oh, but at this date this could happen, at this date this could happen. Because I'm so mindful of where we've been before, and we're definitely not going into this as novices.
Indeed. At least it's not the number three anymore. The third one was never going to work for us. Fourth is
the key. Fourth is the key. So, yeah, hopefully next time we can provide you with some more definite updates on whether or not we're going to be able to proceed. And, yeah, I'll probably be even more nervous and there'll probably be more swearing, but at least we'll be moving it forward.
Indeed.
Which would be good.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Regina, it is such a pleasure to have you on here. Is this our third interview, transatlantic interview that we've done recently? Our second?
Only second, I think.
Only second.
So, oh no, it's our third, you're right.
Yeah, it's our third. Yeah. It's so exciting anyway.
We're so global.
It's really cool. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's just a joy. It's just a joy. So you may or may not know, but we always start the podcast by asking our guests about their journey.
Well, my husband and I got married 15 years ago and decided that the responsible thing to do was to, like, wait a minute, because we had just graduated from college. We were just looking at, you know, let's be responsible and smart and get the good job and figure out what to do next. And when we finally decided that we were going to have kids, we tried for a short while and then nothing was happening. And I'd had ridiculously long periods all along that had been told to me were hypothyroid, and that I should just lose weight and work on your thyroid condition. And meanwhile, I had been a part of a website called Chocolate Brides, which was about Black women getting married, because there weren't a lot of Black women on bridal magazines and things like that. And this was pre Facebook. Uh-huh. So it was a way to kind of connect. And the women on there that had built such a great community that after they would get married, they would stick around and talk about buying a house or having babies. And there were a couple who had talked about how they were having trouble. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's really sad for them.
That would never happen to me.
Yeah, you just don't think. And I also was like, I don't know any Black women who've had any trouble getting pregnant. And when I've ever heard about in vitro and things like that, it's really, really expensive. And I only see white women on the ads. And okay, that didn't think that applied to us.
It's not for me.
And so... yeah, so when we started having issues, I was like, oh, let me ask about this. And then it was like, once the information overload started of just realizing that, hey, maybe your period lasting 2 weeks and 3 weeks at a time is not normal.
Oh, mate.
And may not have anything to do with your thyroid or your weight. Like, then I started to really get angry. Because I was like, okay, so this is a lack of communication on the medical side. and on the community side, because nobody else outside of this small website group that I've been a part of, I've never heard any Black women talk about this. And so I just started blogging about it. And then I went on Facebook one day and I was just like, you know that aunt who never had kids but always was babysitting for everyone? Maybe she couldn't. And I just started like saying those things and people started messaging me and being like, thank you so much for saying that. And I wish I had somebody to talk to. And I never knew that there were other women dealing with this. And I was like, oh, this is what needs to happen. I'm just going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And so I just started talking about it. And I started The Broken Brown Egg in 2009. And it's been going ever since. And it's really just me trying to make sure that nobody else feels alone and that nobody else feels like they don't have a voice, or that nobody else has to be as angry as I was, of just being like, why didn't anybody say this was a thing? Like,
yeah.
Nobody thought this was important for me to know. Yeah. When I'm being told all the time how to not get pregnant, nobody thought to say, well, also, some people are going to have trouble getting pregnant. Yeah. And so it took us a long time, and we've tried. There was the thyroid. Then I found out that I had PCOS. I had a situation with a doctor where I told her I thought maybe I had PCOS, and she was like, everybody's looking at Google these days and thinks they're a doctor, and it's not PCOS.
Oh my God.
You don't have cysts. And I just remember feeling like, you know, two things. One, I'm an actual librarian. So if I'm saying something that I researched, maybe I know what I'm talking about.
You researched it quite well.
Yeah. And two, I just remember feeling so dismissed. Like, okay, I'm coming to you with what I think might be an issue, and I'm trying to work with you about how do we solve this problem. Mm. Because aside from the getting pregnant part, I would like to not bleed so much that I need to write to the owners of Always and tell them thank you for their product.
Oh my gosh.
And she dismissed me so quickly that, and I didn't know how to respond. And it just turned out that I called back a couple weeks later for a follow-up, and she wasn't available. Mm-hmm. And there was another doctor there available. And I was like, I'll go with her. And I kind of tested her when I first got there, and I just asked her, you know, I've been reading about PCOS, and I'm wondering if these symptoms could be looking like thyroid, but maybe be this. And she was like, oh, absolutely. Let's look into it, if that's what you think. And I was like,
thank God.
Oh, I'm supposed to be a partner with my doctor. Oh my
this God. Is how it should be.
Yeah. And I've been with her ever since. And we looked at PCOS, and then I told her I was afraid of IVF.
Okay.
And I didn't really want to go that route. And I told her, I want to see what else we can do. I want to learn as much as I can. Mm. And we tried all of these things. And then we found out that my tubes were completely blocked. And she was like, you know, Regina, you've done everything that you could do. I think you're going to have to do IVF, and I'm going to transfer you over to the fertility center. And I think that that's going to be a really great option for you, because you can get around the blocked tubes. But I want you to know you did everything you could. You did what you wanted to do. And we went to a fertility center. And then we found out that not only did we have blocked tubes, but my husband had male factor issues as well.
Oh my God.
And it was just it was so overwhelming, because at that point we'd been in it for so many years that it was just like.
And how many years had it been by okay. this point?
I want to say maybe 6 or 7. And we were just kind of like, I remember sitting there, and while the doctor was not, you know, intending to be negative in any way, she was just listing out, here's where your AMH levels are. So this could lead to overstimulation. Here's what we're seeing from the male factor issues. Here's what we're looking at cost-wise. And I remember just seeing my husband kind of deflate while we were sitting there. Because it was just like, I think for the first time he realized that it may have something to do with him also. And then I think for the first time he kind of got a real bird's eye view of what I'd been dealing with in terms of going to these doctors, researching these things. Because I had kind of taken it on, like, I'm going to look into
this. This is my project.
And he, yeah, and he hadn't been that in it like that. Yeah. He'd been like, okay, tell me where to stand. But when he started to hear it, like, straight from the doctor's mouth, I think it just kind of deflated him. And we were like, okay, well, this is what we have to do, but let's take a minute, because we had a family member who was saying that she was pregnant and she didn't think that she was going to be able to parent. And so she had asked us if we would be willing to adopt.
Oh, that's interesting.
And we were like, maybe that's why this has, you know, because you try to find a reason.
Yeah, of course. Why, that's what you always do.
Yeah, why have things been going so crazy? Yeah. Oh, maybe it's this.
Yeah.
And so we agreed to do that. And she changed her mind as we were on the way to the hospital to pick up the baby.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
So, but then there was an issue where she still couldn't take the baby home. And so she and Children and Family Services asked if we would step in as foster parents. And so we then fostered that baby for 6 months.
And then you had to give the baby back.
And then we had to give the baby
back.
Yeah,
I saw you described it as parenting purgatory.
Yeah, which is exactly what it is. Oh. It's like you're almost a mom. You're like, you have mom-like tendencies where you're like, you're the one going to the doctor's appointments and you're the one buying the clothes and you're the one that this infant is looking at as their connection to the world. And you're taking on all of that stress and energy of being the parent. Mm. And then someone can call you the next day and be like, I would like to set up a visitation because, and you know, and their entitlement is valid, but also they're not thinking about how heartbreaking it is for you, because this is your experience, and they're just kind of like bulldozing.
Wow. Through.
Oh my God.
But you kind of, at the time, there was a few things happening. I think I wanted to, one, kind of prove to her that, like, we're in a good position over here and we're taking care of her. We're making sure she's okay. Mm. We're being as open and honest with you about everything. Maybe you'll change your mind and see that she's in a good spot. Let me leave her alone. And then you're also thinking, you know, I don't want to do this, but this kid needs me.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to stick it out, because at the end of the day, nothing you do for children is wasted.
Yeah.
This time that they are with you is much better than them having been in just traditional foster care. And so let's just stick it out. But it's so emotionally draining. And then also that affects your relationship, because it's whoever's family member. So now it's like your family is putting us through this, or that feeling personally of my family is hurting my partner this way. And there's all of this going on. And so for 6 months we set through that.
And are you still in that baby's life?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We see her. She was over a couple weeks ago, interacting with our son that we have now, and they're best buddies and everything.
And so that came to an end after 6 months.
Yeah. And then I kind of went into overdrive at that point, where I feel like I have to figure out what to do next, because otherwise this situation is running me. I'm not running it, and I'm going to kind of fall apart. And so the next thing I did, I had been having, I'm a librarian, so I've been using my platform as a librarian to have these panel sessions at the library about how to build your family. And it just so happened that having the broken brown egg, I was able to ask the community for a recommendation of an endocrinologist to speak on that panel. And the person who recommended her was someone who also works in the advocacy arena.
Yeah.
And the endocrinologist who came, she was like, so what's going on with you? Last year, I know you were at this fertility center and blah, blah, blah. And I told her, well, nothing.
Oh, God.
Aside from all of this that's going on, my job recently changed insurance carriers. And so I don't even have insurance to go back to my clinic at this point. And she was just like, come see me. She was like, come see me, because you shouldn't still be in this purgatory of like what to do next. She was like, you're doing all of this to help others and get all this word out, and it just seems unfair that you just can't seem to get there. She was like, so just come see me and I'll take your insurance. Oh, we'll figure that out. And that's like, okay. And I went back to my desk and I remember feeling like, that just happened. Okay. And I told my husband, and I was like, I think we should go. She has a really positive outlook, and I think it would be a really good thing for us to keep moving forward, because otherwise I don't know what we're going to do next. If the fertility center that we were going to see, we'd have to pay out of pocket right now, because our insurance doesn't cover that specific center, or we'd have to start over in another place that we don't have any idea what their success rates. We don't know anything. I said, but I have a good feeling about her. And we went to see her, and she went over that same list that we had had at the other center. But her demeanor was just like, oh, this is nothing. We can take care of that. Oh, we'll handle that. This is great. Oh, and I saw that same way that I saw my husband deflate. I saw him kind of be like, oh, all right. And she was just like, we're going to do this test today. We're going to send in for this today.
Oh my God.
Come back next week. We're doing this. And everything just kind of moved instantly. Wow. And I remember feeling like, you know, all of this that felt like such theft of my time had actually been what was going to prepare me or even introduce me. I would have never met this doctor had I not gone through all of these other things.
God, the word today really is music to an infertile person's ears, isn't it?
Yes. And it was like, wait, you're doing that test like right now? She was like, yeah, just let's go across the hall.
Gina, that's
like,
awesome.
Wait, today? Like, I don't have to come back in 2 weeks and then do something for 3 weeks and then I'm in the next month. Because with infertility, you're in a time game. You feel like you're in a time game all the time.
All the time.
You feel like if I'm not pregnant by March, then this whole year is shot, because now I'm in next year. And then if I don't have this by October, then I'm not prepared. And you start to feel like everything in your life is running on this clock. And it's not even your biological clock anymore. It's your let's throw something at the wall and see what sticks clock. It's like, what are we going to try this time? I don't know. Let's lose weight. Okay, great. All right. Let's try estrogen pills. Okay, cool.
Oh, man.
It's just, you get so tired of that start and stop and hurry up and wait.
It's the hope. And the disappointment, the hope disappointment.
Yes, immediate disappointment. Yeah. And she started everything. We were able to, she did see a couple of more cysts, because my body is just strange. And it likes to prepare for Y2K. And she was positive. She was just like, we're going to do another DNC. She was like, don't be discouraged. This is because we want to make sure that the embryos have a safe place to live. Like, even that conversation felt less devastating than all the other ones that I had. Uh-huh. It was just like, this is so that we can get to the next step. This is not another stop. It's not. We're still moving. And I remember feeling like, I will follow you, because I was just like, at that point, you're just kind of tired. And so it was good to have someone who had a jolt of energy and ready to go. And so we did a DNC. She was like, let's get started. And then all of a sudden we were in IVF. And I was like, this thing that I had been terrified of, I think at that point, I've been afraid of needles my whole life. And at that point I was just like, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
IVF will clear you of your fear of needles.
Oh, really, definitely.
It really does.
It'll be like, oh, fear of that? Yeah. Whatever.
And it's just not as bad as you think it's going to be. Like, the whole,
it's not.
Yeah.
It's not. And you find that there's so many YouTube videos of people who are so willing to show you, here's how I do this injection.
I love the way you're pointing at the back there.
Yeah. And I remember I had to teach my mom how to do it once, because we were going to be going on vacation and my husband wasn't going with us, and I was like freaking her out because she was like, but because I was like, there may be blood if that happens. She was like, I saw her eyes
freaking out.
Oh my god!
But people who aren't in it, this isn't normal. They're like, wait, you're not a diabetic, but you're giving yourself this amount of shots every day.
Even when, because I had to, when Gabby was doing her IVF, I did one of the injections, and it was like maybe a year since I'd done it to myself, and I was like freaking out. There is audio available on the internet of me going like that.
Because you're losing your mind. You're like, wait a minute, I'm not a doctor or a nurse. What are you asking of me? So we transferred one embryo, and that was successful. And I remember when I went for the follow-up appointment for the beta testing, the nurse who had kind of become like my favorite nurse, she was like, so look, I don't call with bad news until late in the day, because I don't like to make those calls.
Oh my god.
She was like, so I'm gonna call you, I'll call you today, but if it's later in the day, sometimes it's because it's difficult news. So she was like, I just want you to be prepared. Because if you're not going home, because I told her, I'm not going home, I'm going to work. Because if I go home, my brain is going to explode. Yeah. I'm just going to be waiting for you to call all day.
Yeah.
Which, in hindsight, still not a smart choice, because I'm a children's and youth librarian. So going to the library with small children and teenagers was probably not mentally.
Oh, I'll be able to forget about it. Totally.
Yeah,
no problem. I'll just watch all these normal, quote-unquote, moms come in for story time and story hour.
Those bitches.
And that'll be fine. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's great. Good idea, Regina. Smart. And I remember thinking, okay, well, let me just try not to think about it. I'll just go about my day. And then by, like, noon, she hadn't called. And I was like, well, there it is. That's the bad news. That's it. Because you're used to it. That roller coaster has been going. Yeah. So you're like, here comes the bad news. She would have called me earlier, I guess. How do I tell my mom? How do I tell Jabari? I just started thinking, how do I tell all these people? Mm-hmm. I'm really sorry for getting you excited.
Oh.
And that's another thing that we do that I think is really why mental health has to be more of the conversation with fertility, is that we immediately go into caretaker mode for everybody else. I immediately started thinking, how do I tell my husband, I'm so sorry that I made you go through this, and I'm so sorry that you got your hopes up. And
I hope you're okay about this.
I hope you're okay. I hope that you are able to forgive me. I hope that this doesn't make you lose hope. And you start to go into this caretaker and you never look at the mirror and say, are you okay? I'm really sorry that you got your hopes up. I'm really sorry that you might be hurting. And I hope that you don't lose hope. We never do that with ourselves. We start thinking instantly about, here's the other way that I've failed. And I was in that mode, and then she called, and she was like speaking so slowly that I was like, she is really, really dragging this out. She doesn't want to hurt my feelings.
Hurry up.
Yeah, I was like, just rip the Band-Aid off so that we can find out what to do next, or I can come in for the follow-up and we can look at what I did wrong that made this all blow up. And she was like, so you're pregnant. And she started listing the numbers and what they should have been. And she was like, and yours are up here. And oh, I was like, I was sitting at work and I shared it. I was assistant manager at the time. So I shared the office space with my manager. And so I didn't want to be unprofessional. And I think I was also in a little bit of shock because I'm so used to bad news. And I'm also so used to high numbers being a bad thing for me. My AMH numbers were way too high. My thyroid numbers are way too high. So when she's telling me that these numbers are high, I'm waiting for her to also tell me, and so because of that, we'll need you to do XYZ. And so when I'm sitting there, I think I had this like full on like fake voice of like, oh, great. thank you so much for that information.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to be excited or anything. And I remember I called my husband after that, and he worked at a public facing desk too. So he also gave me the, well, thank you for that. Like, we were both just kind of like
shocked.
It's funny, isn't it? In those situations, because I feel like that all the movies that we've ever seen in our lives show us that we should react to things like that immediately. But actually, I don't think we do react to things like that immediately.
No.
Although I did cry when I found out. But I think most people are just like, okay then.
Interesting.
Yes. All right.
That's good news. Thank you for informing me. Like, it's marvelous. Very corporate. It's very corporate. Because you can't process that. And also, after, at that point, you know, 7 or 8 years of trying... Mm. For somebody to be like, oh, okay, and it's done. It's like very anticlimactic. Yeah. You're like, but wait, so I don't, so there's no boss battle after this? Like,
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. And now I'm supposed to be happy, excited, pregnant person.
Yeah.
Oh, but sure. Actually, that'll be easy.
Here's some new anxieties that I hadn't even expected.
Yeah, here's the next level of anxiety. I think at one point, I like went livid over, I'd gone to Wendy's and gotten a chicken sandwich for lunch. And I remember like this feeling of like it was undercooked. And I was like, after all that I have done, I will blow this establishment.
I cannot have this kid killed by chicken.
I cannot. And it's like your brain just goes into this new level of anxiety and this unwillingness to allow yourself to be happy because it's like, after you've done all this research and been a part of this community, the thing about the infertility community is that it's not just the infertility community, it's also the loss community. And so you're also now thinking, how do I protect this myself? And how do I protect this child? And how do I protect the community? Mm, yeah. Because I don't want, because then you have survivor's guilt, because then you're like, I can't talk about it because I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings who's still in it. I don't want to ruin it because I know intimately after seeing so many people or having experienced loss yourself, I know that this doesn't mean baby. This doesn't mean baby. So you're still telling yourself, it's kind of real. I won't believe it until I see a heartbeat. And then you go and you see a heartbeat and hear a heartbeat and you go, still not real.
Yeah.
Until I see a full baby body.
Yeah.
I'll be fine when I hit 12 weeks. I'll be fine when I hit 24 weeks. I'll be fine when I go into labor. I'll be fine when it's born. I still think that someone's going to come and take my baby away from me.
Yes. Yes. and a feeling of like I can't show any of my most intense feelings are. I can't tell them how terrified I am because then they're going to be like, are you not fit to be this person's parent? Yeah. And I can't tell them how much I'm like checking if they're breathing and someone's going to belittle that and say, well, all new parents do that. And it's like, not all new parents.
Because I put an alarm on my phone.
Yes. Right.
So Regina, I was going to say to you, one of the things you've written about is what happened next after you had your baby, which was that you suffered from postnatal depression. So talk to us about that. Did that become yet another thing that you didn't feel you could talk about, that you didn't hear people talk about?
Yes. And it was massive. Mm. Massive and almost immediate, where I was afraid. I've been driving since I was 14, and I was afraid to drive my car. I've been as the teen librarian where I am, I work a lot with, you know, handling adult feelings about teenagers. People are afraid of teens.
I'm definitely so afraid of teens.
Like, yeah, so if they're like congregating in front of the building or if they talk back, people get really nervous. And I've been the person who's been like, it's fine, we'll handle it. And I can talk to them and it's okay. And I remember being so afraid of interaction and confrontation.
Wow.
Once I got back to work. And then also here in the U.S., everyone was preparing for the presidential election, which was
Was this 2016?
We won't talk about that one.
Good times.
Yeah. Yeah, and about to be all over again. But at that moment, there was so much happening around me that I just felt like I can't handle this. And when it came to, and a lot of things have been influenced for me, obviously, because of being an African American, a lot of conversations aren't had in our community.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of IVF, I remember it wasn't until I started talking about it that I found out that I had relatives who had done IVF or who had adopted or all of these different things. And the same thing with mental health. It's not necessarily something that's greatly talked about in the African American community for various reasons. Legitimately, there are some fears. In the past, there were fears that, you know, if people think I'm unstable and unwell, they'll call Child and Family Services and I'll lose my children. Or if I'm unstable and unwell, I could lose my job. If I'm unstable and unwell, then there's something wrong. And those things go back, in my opinion, and it could very well be wrong, but those things go back all the way to civil rights movement. They go all the way back to slavery, where it's like having any flaws puts you in danger. In the research that I've done, even going back to slavery, if the sole purpose of a Black woman at that time was to bear children for the economic wealth of that time period, if she can't have children, she's broken. And if she's broken, we don't need to keep her around. We can sell her away from her family. We can remove her from all of those fears of what brokenness can do to us, I feel, are rooted culturally, and they trauma follows generationally. And so when it comes to mental health, it's the same thing, where we just don't discuss it because we don't talk about our internal issues outwardly, because it can put not just you in danger, but your family, your community. So we are going to discuss those things internally, or barbershop, beauty salon, church, because those are our sacred safe spaces where we don't have a lot of outward influence. And so when it came to struggling with mental health, again, I was like frantically looking for, I just need to hear somebody else say that they're afraid to do something normal, like drive. And I remember hearing about postpartum, same thing, but not the, it was two extremes. Either you're just a little sad, or it was you're suicidal. I had never heard of just the basic, when I get in public, I'm freaking out a little bit about crowds. I'm hyper vigilant about making sure everything is locked at night. I'm checking the stove way too many times. I'm in tears at things that wouldn't normally make me sad. And the more that I started to have those feelings, I was like, I have to talk to somebody. I can't do this. And I remember when I finally found a therapist, the minute that I got in the room, she hadn't even really said anything to me yet. And I just was in tears. And I was like, I'm a basket case. And she was like, well, no, you're not.
No, definitely not. You just had a baby.
I was. And I was telling her, and I was like, but I had the baby a few months ago. Like, I shouldn't still be upset. And she was like, well, postpartum can last up to 3 years. Again, something I'd never known. And then you're also thinking, especially if you've dealt with infertility, you're also thinking, how am I going to be the perfect mom? Because I made this, I pushed this so hard, I can't fail at it. So we need to make sure that we're in the mommy and me yoga, and we need to make sure that we're in the dance class, and I need to make sure that you're eating homemade baby food, and I need to make sure that I'm cloth diapering so that I save the environment, so that there's a world for you. Like, there's all of this heaviness that it's not to say that other parents don't experience, but I feel like when you've dealt with infertility, you kind of have those things on you already.
Yeah.
And so it's just this heavier feeling.
Do you feel like there's this sense of, this might be my only chance to get it right?
This is my only chance.
If I screw this kid up, that's it. Yeah, that's all the kids I'm going to have.
That's it. And I don't even know how I'm going to afford, because that's the other thing with infertility, which I just mentioned, I think on my Instagram the other day, was just like, the other part that was never in the conversation until I got all the way up to starting IVF was, if you have more than one embryo, now you're going to have to pay to store them.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't pay, then you're going to have to make decisions about those embryos. So now, even at year one of this first success, quote unquote, you now have to make decisions about how many more children you want. It's like you don't get the opportunity to make calm decisions. If you start to feel like everybody else, which I know is a generalization and is not accurate, but that is how you feel.
Oh, definitely.
Feel like everybody else gets to just casually discuss over brunch, you know what? You think we should have a baby next year?
Like when you kind of wrote about it and kind of came out about it, so to speak, what was the reaction like? Did you have tons of women be like, I'm the same?
Same thing. Same thing as when I first started talking about infertility. Mm. Was just like, thank you so much for talking about, especially from the infertility community, because the feeling of loss there is that you've had this community. The infertility community is one of the most loving and kind and encouraging communities, because we all know intimately the sadnesses that we feel,
mm-hmm.
and we just don't want anyone to feel alone, because we know how isolated and alone we are. And so we try so hard to be kind to one another in this community. And then all of a sudden, depending on whether or not you resolve to become childless, or if you move forward with growing your family, you feel like you've lost that, because I can't talk to that community anymore the same way, because they're still trying and I'm not. And I don't know how to talk to them. And so now you're alone again. And so when I started to talk about the mental health thing, I started to get another slew of messaging that was just like, thank you. And then even outside of the infertility community, I just started to post just in general. I still do it. I think I did one last week on my regular Facebook page that was like, got therapy today.
Yeah. Normalize it.
Today. Yeah, I got therapy today and going to Bible class tonight. Like, just being very honest and transparent about when I'm having a hard time has given a lot of other people the permission that they didn't need but felt like they needed to say, you know what? Yeah, I am having a hard time as well. Can you tell me how you found your therapist? And I think
that that's been a
big deal of just like, we have to normalize all of these are all health issues.
Yeah,
mental health is health. Infertility is health. Like, you didn't cause it.
Just because you can't see it.
Yeah, exactly. And the more that we normalize and make those things transparent, it also helps when you're... One of the biggest things that I noticed when I first started the journey from myself and other people was the feeling of when you go to work. There are some days where you're completely devastated and gutted, and you've got to go to work and act like everything's fine.
Yeah.
You need that report by 5 o'clock. Got you covered. Like,
yeah.
When internally you're like, I cannot care two shits less about whatever it is that you just asked me, because I got horrible news at 7 o'clock this morning after I drove an hour to take a test. Like, I don't care. But we're also conditioned to keep those things private and not want to make it look like you're being unprofessional. When you work a job, you're taking you to that job. Yeah. And that includes when you're not at your best. And when you don't feel your best, you can't do your best anyway. So you might as well tell the truth.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And the work that you've done with that is amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess our last question would be kind of linked to that, which is, what advice would you give to people who are struggling with postnatal depression after they've gone through fertility treatment?
I think the biggest thing is to not feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
As with everything else, with infertility, we learn how to take our health seriously and how to become advocates for ourselves as best we can. Mm. And we have to do the same thing with our mental health, because it's health too.
Yeah.
And it is affected by so many things that are not your fault. There are hormonal issues. There are environmental issues. And then also recognizing that life is difficult.
Yeah.
And it's okay to acknowledge that your life is difficult and that you don't have to have it all figured out. And that it's okay to say, I have zero idea what I'm doing right now. And if that comes after infertility, it has such a higher, it has such a heaviness on it. And I feel like we're doing a disservice to ourselves and the families that we're trying to cultivate if we're not able to be upfront about it. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm not saying that, that people have to, how you handle it doesn't have to look like anybody else.
Yeah.
You may not, you may choose not to be loud and proud and upfront, but as I, the blunt way that I've been telling my family is you need to find you somebody's couch to sit on.
Yeah. I like it.
Even if you don't necessarily need advice, sometimes you need to vent.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
You need to outwardly say, this sucks and I'm angry or I'm scared or I'm hurt. And even if you don't need the advice, you need to get it out so that then you can say, okay, and now what? This is what I'm going to do now. I had to at least acknowledge it, face it, and now I can do something else. But if I keep trying to compartmentalize the fact that I'm terrified, but let me act like I'm not, that's not healthy. And eventually you're going to go off on everybody around you.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest thing is to just find someone to talk to.
Yeah.
Find someone, and not just your best buddy.
Find someone you're absolutely right.
Who is actually trained so that if they spot warning signs or if they think something else might be beneficial to you, they have the training to help you with it.
Yeah.
And there's no shame in any of these things. It's really just taking off the shame and being honest about it.
Well, I think that is a very lovely note to end on.
It really is. Thank you so much for chatting to
us. Regina, it's been so great to talk to you. And I'm just loving all these transatlantic calls we're making at the moment. So great.
You guys are fancy at this point. Yeah.
Now it's time for
IVF.
What the F?
What the F? Every time we do that, my brain says old wives' tales.
Really?
It's been a long time since we've done old wives' tales.
That's so funny.
But every time I have to check in with myself and I'm like, no, it's IVF. What the F?
Well, it kind of, it's funny because we don't always talk about IVF.
No, of course we don't.
But it does work.
It's
just,
you know, it's a catchy title.
It's a catchy title. Thank you to your friend who came up with it.
Indeed. Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Jenny. So we are talking about sperms.
Optimum time for spermies.
And where did you hear this?
I don't know where I heard it, to be honest, but it was when I was trying naturally and somewhere someone said sperm in the morning is more active.
Is Mr. Gabby more active in the morning?
Definitely not. Cool. 100% not. So that would suggest that maybe his swimmers are also a bit sedentary in the morning.
So were you like waking him up being like, it's time? And he was like, oh, God. Do me. Oh, mate, we've found the reason why you couldn't conceive naturally.
That's obviously why. I'm so stupid.
So we asked Professor Tim about it.
And here's what he had to say.
So there's not really, well, there's not an optimum time for intercourse from a sperm perspective. Certainly any man with a normal sperm result, so normal sperm count, motility and volume, there's plenty of sperm there to actually get through the cervix up into the tubes and to meet an egg around the time of ovulation. In terms of sperm testing or sperm freezing or what have you, again, it doesn't make any difference. So if any studies do show a slight difference in sperm quality through the day, it's not really going to make any difference to actual treatment outcomes or chance of natural conception. So I think in terms of a trying naturally for pregnancy, trying a couple of times per week, so every 1, 2, or 3 days per week is absolutely plenty, and I wouldn't worry about the timing of that necessarily at all.
that's all, guys. I hope you enjoyed it.
I also hope you enjoyed it. If you want to hear from Regina, you can follow her. It's at Broken Brown Egg on Instagram.
Yaha. And yeah. You can read, she's got a lovely blog if you search for Broken Brown Egg on the Googles or any other search engine.
Yeah. Thank you this week to Regina herself.
Thank you, Regina. Thank you to Liz and Nick.
Thank you to Professor Tim.
Thank you to all of the birds.
All the lovely birdies. And thank you to Acast.
Thank you to Acast. And what have we got coming up next week, Emma?
Well, it's just me next week. Me and my Todd.
Yeah.
Well, the interview anyway. Talking to...
It's just me talking about me.
It's just me talking about me. I've decided to eject Gabby from the podcast. No.
Yeah.
That would never happen.
I've been fired, guys.
It's me talking to Martha Goddard. She is the writer and director, or co-writer and director, of a really interesting project called All Our Eggs. And it's like internet shorts about infertility. It's really great. Like, we had such a nice chat. And she's Australian. So, like, another global interview.
Should people spend some time watching some of those this week in prep for the interview? Because they're really good.
They're really good. They're on YouTube, they're on Instagram, they're on TikTok. Just search All Our Eggs and it'll come up. And it's just great. And there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of relatable content. Although, don't watch it if you're at work, because the very first scene is of the kind of the protagonist, Charlie, stretching cervical mucus between her fingers. Do not watch that at work.
We've all been there.
NSFW.
Amazing. Right, guys. Enjoy that.
Have a lovely week, everyone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.